This is KMUN News. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Wednesday, February 11th. The old American Legion building in downtown Raymond was torn down last week to make way for a new American Legion Veteran Housing and Resource Center. The $16 million project was envisioned by the Willapa Community Development Association and will also include the housing of Raymond City Hall on the bottom floor of the new building. The second and third stories will hold 18 studio-style apartments that are prioritized for veterans. The building in downtown Raymond is on track to be completed in March of 2027. Recently sworn-in Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, Admiral Kevin Lundy, says he plans to visit Station Cape Disappointment later this month. At a U.S. Senate hearing late last month, Senator Maria Cantwell asked Lundy to visit the station, which is in need of repairs to its infrastructure. In 2024, a tugboat struck the station's docks, causing significant damage. Station Cape Disappointment is also in need of new docks in order to support the new replacement fleet for its 52-foot heavy surf rescue boats. With its proximity to the treacherous Columbia River Bar, Cape Disappointment is considered the largest search and rescue station in the Pacific Northwest. During his visit later this month, Lundy says he also plans to make a stop at the National Motor Lifeboat School at Cape Disappointment. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. Clatsop Behavioral Health's newly completed housing project, the Baker Building, on Marine Drive in Astoria, is set for a grand opening next Friday, February 20th. The building has 32 permanent supportive housing units for people experiencing chronic homelessness. Executive Director of Clatsop Behavioral Health, Shira Marilla, says residents will have access to 3 or 4 staff members, including 1 live-in employee, who will support daily living, community connection, and skill building. Most of the Baker Building staff were transitioned from a low-barrier shelter in Seaside that closed in November. The Baker Building project has been in the works for roughly 4 years, funded primarily through grants from the Oregon Health Authority and the Federal Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. Astoria City Manager Scott Spence says he's received positive feedback about the project from the community and that it is filling a much-needed housing gap. Clatsop Behavioral Health is partnering with Clatsop Community Action to coordinate the entry process for residents. Marilla says priority is given to those with the highest documented barriers, such as medical fragility, long-term homelessness, behavioral health needs, or safety risks. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian. Read more online at dailyastorian.com. Mental health providers in Idaho say they're having difficulty stabilizing severely ill patients after the state cut Medicaid funding for certain behavioral health programs. NWPB's Rachel Sun has this report.
For decades, Idaho used Medicaid funding for a program called Assertive Community Treatment, or ACT, to treat severely mentally ill patients where they're at. But that is no longer paid for. Sarah Bennett, a clinician based in Lewiston, is one of the providers who had been contracted to run her region's ACT program. She says ACT funding also paid for a nurse to administer treatments such as monthly injectable antipsychotics. Here's Bennett talking about 2 clients who are now struggling.
He was 3 weeks late last month, and he's already a week late this month. We have another individual who also hasn't had an injection in over a month.
Idaho made cuts to a number of behavioral health programs. Rick Boyce is another mental health clinician and co-director of the Idaho Association of Community Providers. His organization estimates that cuts to these programs could cost the state more than $150 million in local taxpayer dollars.
For local taxpayers footing the bill for increased emergency care, we are looking between $200 and $800 per person per year.
Providers say they're hopeful that legislators will work to restore funding for those programs. I'm Rachel Sun.
Leaders at the Department of Veterans Affairs are planning the largest reorganization of its giant healthcare system in 3 decades. But VA workers and some in Congress are skeptical it will improve patient care. Jay Price reports for the American Homefront Project.
VA Secretary Doug Collins told members of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee the changes are aimed at problems that auditors, politicians on both sides of the aisle, and veterans groups have pointed to for years.
We were trapped internally into our own policies, procedures, things that have been added on, none which added up to taking care of veterans, but ended up taking care of the VA itself.
He said the reorganization would reduce bureaucratic bloat, but he said it wouldn't result in another round of job cuts or affect staffing on the front lines at VA medical centers and clinics.
Here are the goals: improve healthcare quality for veterans, empower local hospital directors, eliminate duplicative layers of bureaucracy, ensure consistent application of VA policies across all department medical facilities.
According to a report released just before the hearing by the ranking Democrat on the committee, Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, the VA lost about 40,000 workers in the past year, many from the so-called DOGE cuts. The report says about 88% were healthcare staff. Some 10,000 of those jobs have since been filled, but it's unclear what kinds. That's left frontline healthcare workers skeptical of any reorganization that doesn't include more hiring. Sharda Fornarino, a VA registered nurse in Colorado, says the agency does have bureaucratic inefficiencies, but she doubts that reorganizing administrative offices will get at the most basic problem at hospitals and clinics.
We need more people that are boots on the ground.
Last summer, the VA's Office of the Inspector General said VA facilities reported a 50% increase in staffing shortages, including doctors and nurses. The VA took exception, saying its staffing was actually better than that in the private sector. But Fornarino says the worker crunch is real, not only for medical personnel, but for jobs like cleaning rooms, sterilizing equipment, and delivering meals.
We're doing multiple people's jobs, which leads to burnout, which leads to moral distress.
One of the most significant parts of the planned reorganization is eliminating most of the agency's regional administrative centers, which are called Veterans Integrated Service Networks, or VISNs. They typically oversee medical centers and clinics across several states. Instead of 18 VISNs, there would be 5, with much larger territories. Under each remaining VISN would be 3 new offices, called Health Service Areas, to work directly with medical center leadership teams. To Fornarino, that sounds like little more than moving chairs around.
All these people, all these jobs have been cut, but the leadership jobs haven't been cut. They're just going to be renamed.
In addition to the tens of thousands of workers who left last year, the VA says it also plans to eliminate 25,000 vacant positions. It says these are mostly COVID-era jobs that had been unfilled for more than a year. The agency says cutting those open jobs won't affect veteran care, but Matt Pearsall, a University of North Carolina organizational behavior professor, says beleaguered frontline healthcare workers may still interpret it as a signal that no relief is headed their way.
It's been a year and there's nobody coming in that spot. You've adapted to the new normal and probably you just don't do certain things because there's no way to do the job of 10 people with 7 people forever.
The Republican chairman of the committee, Kansas Senator Jerry Moran, supported VA officials during the hearing, but he sounded a cautionary note about expectations. He said his time on the committee spanned the tenures of 11 VA secretaries and...
They all made promises to improve the bureaucracy, backlogs, implementation of VA care, and while they have made good faith efforts to do so, we continue to look for long-lasting, successful changes and improvements at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
This latest reorganization is expected to take about 2 years. I'm Jay Price reporting.
Up next, the BBC's What in the World. And after that, stay tuned for The Ship Report with Joanne Rideout. You're listening to KMUN.
Hey, I'm Ikra, and this is What in the World from the BBC World Service. The reviews are in, the group chats are buzzing. Together, we are America was the motto from Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show. It's being seen as a love letter to his home, Puerto Rico. He's the first musician to perform almost entirely in Spanish at a Super Bowl. And for those who don't know, the Super Bowl is the championship game of the American National Football League. But culturally, it's much bigger than that. I'm thinking of all those memes asking, why is the football interrupting the Bad Bunny concert? So in this episode, we're getting the Bad Bunny debrief, the hidden messages in the performance, why President Trump isn't so happy, and how the show is going down with you guys too. Was it what you were expecting?
My name is Bailey Lefton, and I'm based in the USA.
My name is Zara. I'm 25, and I'm from Germany.
My name's Anais. I'm from London.
I'm Federica, and I'm from Italy.
Hi, my name is Niklaus, and I'm from Los Angeles, California.
It was easily the best halftime show I've ever seen, and the whole setup was just so stunning, and the way it represented Puerto Rico, it was so beautiful.
It was truly so amazing. It was a great way of showing pride for his community and his culture. You could feel included in the party and the celebration, and it was just a great message about unity, basically.
He speaks openly about issues that matter. He doesn't water himself down, and he doesn't make himself smaller to fit into a global industry. That's what it looks like when you use your platform with intention to stay rooted and really to pour back into your home and your people.
I love Bad Bunny because he's just vibes. You can feel the passion and emotions in his music, and you can also just have fun to it. And I think Benito is one of the greatest of our generation, and I really appreciate that he also stands up for his values.
I feel like music in general is a universal language. You don't really need to understand it to feel the same thing as everyone else.
Let's chat to BBC Sport reporter and my pal, Sam Harris, who's had the dream gig covering the Super Bowl. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Ikra.
Sam, you've only just left the stadium in San Francisco. It sounds like you're a little bit delirious at the moment. What was it like? What was the vibe?
Oh my gosh, it was one of the best sporting spectacles that you can possibly witness. Everything is big and glitz and glam. It's the hallmark of Americanism, if you will.
And I've been seeing a lot of the different standout moments on my socials. What got people talking in the stadium, though?
Oh my gosh, there was absolutely loads. So he was dancing, and he walked past so many Latin American celebrities, music artists, actors. Jessica Alba was there, Pedro Pascal, Cardi B, Karol G. Walked past all of them, and then gets on top of a roof of what is actually a club in New York. It's one of the last Latin American clubs in New York that he was stood upon. And then who appears? Lady Gaga in a blue dress, singing Die with a Smile with a little Latin twist on it as well, which was really nice. After that, there was a wedding. There was a real life wedding. NBC reporting that it was a couple that had actually originally asked Bad Bunny to be at their wedding. He couldn't attend and said, oh, why don't you do it at my Super Bowl halftime performance instead? So they had a full-on wedding party, a Latin American wedding party, no less. There was even things like a little taco van that, you know, was a small business in LA, and Bad Bunny had literally got them to take their food truck to be on his set. And then the fireworks around the electric towers and stuff like that, that was a reference to Puerto Rico. They often have power cuts. There was loads. I could talk about them all night, to be honest.
Yeah, he definitely packed a lot into his 14-minute set. Few moments that stood out to me when he walked into a living room set and handed his Grammy award to a young boy. That's gone viral. Lots of people saying it's the most powerful part of the performance. And towards the end, we had the sign in the background that said, "The only thing more powerful than hate is love." He said one line in English, "God bless America," before listing nations of Central, South and North America as dancers carried their flags. And there was a lot of chat about whether this halftime show would be controversial or whether Bad Bunny would make a big political statement, you know, especially after his Grammy speech last week. So, Sam, remind us what happened.
So when he won Album of the Year last week at the Grammys, he went on stage and he said, "We're not aliens. We are humans. We are Americans." And he also said, well, he started the speech with "Ice Out." So that's the context beforehand. So many people did think there could be some sort of political statement this time around. There wasn't as much as a political statement, rather a mantra for America going forward and a look ahead of hope. He was talking about unity.
ICE, of course, being Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's the federal agency that's been the target of mass protests in the US after ICE agents recently shot dead two American citizens in Minneapolis. Sam, I mean, you were chatting about a bit there, but what message do you think he actually delivered during the halftime show, if it was a bit more subtle in the references?
I think it was just a message of love and real passion for the Latin community, especially here in America. They've been through so much. We've spoke to so many throughout the week that have felt scared, that haven't wanted to leave their house. And they've seen Bad Bunny as a real icon, a real beacon of hope for them. It was really quite overwhelming for a few people that they've never witnessed this before. Representation is very, very important. Some of them just couldn't contain it. There were tears, there were laughter, there were smiles, there was joy. It was one big party.
Not everybody's happy with the show, though. Just before the performance, the boxer and influencer Jake Paul wrote on social media that Bad Bunny was a fake American citizen. Please set the record straight. Is Bad Bunny a US citizen?
Yeah, Puerto Rico is an American territory. Bad Bunny is an American.
President Trump wasn't a fan of the halftime show either.
No, he wasn't. And there's more context to this. So when Bad Bunny was picked, and that was last summer, Donald Trump actually said that the decision was absolutely ridiculous. Fast forward to today, then he posts on Truth Social that this was a performance that was a slap in the face of our country. And he berated Bad Bunny and the NFL for their decision to have a Latin American artist who only sang in Spanish.
Yeah, writing on social media shortly after the show, President Trump actually called the dancing in the halftime show disgusting and said, "Nobody understands a word this guy is saying." I just want to point out that many Americans would have understood. Tens of millions of Americans actually speak Spanish. And after Mexico, the US has the most Spanish speakers in the world. Sam, Turning Point USA, which is the conservative group that works with young Americans, staged the alternative All-American halftime show. What do we know about that show? How did it go down?
So the headliner was Kid Rock, and they also had a few other country stars in there as well. We saw some reports that they drew around 6 million viewers at their peak. But if you compare that to the Super Bowl, that actually gets up around more than 130 million. So plenty more people tuning in for the Super Bowl. There was also some issues around audio there as well. The production wasn't necessarily what Turning Point USA would have hoped for, I imagine.
Yeah, and I guess stepping back from the politics for a second, how do you think this halftime show will be remembered?
I think it will be remembered for one big show of America's hopeful future. Bad Bunny could have made really, really obvious political statements, but he chose to put on a party. He chose to bring people together. He invited people to learn Spanish. He invited people to learn about the culture. But if you didn't know, he just said, "We're here to have fun. And this is a real celebration of American culture, not just Latin American culture, but American culture and how Latin American culture can sit alongside traditional American culture too." Thank you very much, Ikra.
Thanks, Sam. That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can DM us on Instagram at BBC What's in the World at any time. It's always fun to read your messages. But for now, I'm Ikra. This is What's in the World from the BBC World Service, and I'll see you next time.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team. That includes me, host and producer Skylar Butenchen, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and news director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening.